Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting Episode 7. I'm Sandy Fowler, and I'm here today with my co-host, Judy Davis. And today, we get to help you in an area where parents frequently struggle. You might find yourself struggling with the schools. You might find the struggle with teachers or coaches, even friends or family or your doctor. And when that happens, you know, I know for me, if I have that kind of thing on, sometimes it just feels like you're all alone fighting for your child because other people just don't get your kid.
Sandy, you are so right. I know for me, if someone says something about my kids, I don't care what it is, if it's something even a little bit, I get defensive. You know, that's my go-to. And today's topic of how do we advocate for our kids without becoming that crazy mama bear cyclone every time? And our guest, Meg Flanagan, she's a pro at teaching people how to get the most for their kids without having somebody wanting to wring their neck. Meg's a teacher, mom, and military spouse, fellow military spouse. And she is in Japan right now. So I give you all the things. Oh my gosh, that's a big one. But she's dedicated to making the K-12 education experience easier for families. She's the founder of MillKidsEd.com, great site with lots of great information, and the author of a book called Talk to the Teacher, Get What Your Child Needs, Keep the Teacher on Your Side. And Meg creates content for all kinds of sites, both civilian and military alike. Meg, welcome to Mighty Parenting.
Thank you. Thank you, Judy and Sandy, for having me. I'm so happy to be here. Yes.
I'm really excited to have you here, Meg, because in talking to parents in so many different areas that they might need something for their kid, whether it's educational or allergies or social or whatever, they do. They're frustrated and they feel like they're alone. So you're the one out there working with families and helping them get what they need. So tell us, you know, typically, when parents need to advocate for their child without having assistance from someone like you, what happens? You know, how do you see that play out most often?
So really one of two things is going to happen. So either the parent's going to go in and they're not going to know how to verbalize what they need. They're going to go in and say, help my child, without any further indication of what precisely to help with. The other thing that's going to happen is that parents are going to go in and assign blame. They're going to come in and say, you are not doing X, Y, Z for my child and you ought to be. And instead of coming at it from a constructive, let's work together thing, all of a sudden we've set up a battle with the second option and a needle in the haystack search with the first option.
Oh my gosh, I love that two things, the needle in the haystack or the battle. Both seem like that will leave the parent feeling very disconnected from the education system and at a loss of what to do. I mean, how do you even know how to ask for what your child needs? Can you give us some specifics of what you might see in behaviors and then what a parent might ask?
Yeah, absolutely. So what you might see in the academic side is you might see a child who is becoming very frustrated, very angry or sad. You come home, pick them up from school, and they're just a bundle of nerves. They're feeling defeated. And at home, homework is a battle every day. Again, that battle analogy where you're having to coerce and bribe and strategize to just get your child to do what looks to you to be a very simple worksheet or assignment. That could indicate, you know, your child's not really understanding. Maybe the lesson's moving too fast, or your child simply is not understanding the concept for something that's going on internally with them. Another thing that you might look for is, you know, personality, social, emotional things where, you know, kids will be kids and not everyone gets along with everyone else, and that's fine. But what you should be watching out for as a parent is if your child is showing anxiety about going to school. You know, every kid wakes up in the morning, especially in cold winter days, and says, I don't feel good. I don't want to go to school. But if your child is saying that every single day, or you know, seems sad or depressed or withdrawn, that could signal that something might be going on emotionally, socially, or with friendship circles, maybe with bullying, maybe a personality conflict with the teacher. So those are two of the main areas that I personally have seen, you know, maybe parents not pick up on those clues or not know how to come at them and say, hey, something is wrong and we need to sit and talk about this.
Okay. So then, if you see, oh, go on, Sandy.
No, that was an interesting one because when I was a kid, actually, I would do that, you know, wake up, oh, I don't feel good, I don't want to go to school. But eventually my parents figured out it was always the same day of the week. Well, that happened to be gym day. But what I think I heard you say, Meg, was essentially if we take the approach of being, you know, as the parent, if we take the approach of being curious about what's going on and approach any other staff or other adults in our kids' lives with that curiosity, just kind of telling them what we're seeing and ask what they think, is that a good approach to take?
That's absolutely the best approach to take, because when you come at it from the I want to know situation as opposed from the you're doing something wrong situation, you're coming at it as a team already. You're saying, hey, this is what I'm seeing at home. What are you seeing at school? So immediately you're setting yourself, you're allying yourself together. You and the teacher are going to be working at this from two different sides of the same problem, home and school. You're going to be coming together and saying, I'm seeing this. I'm seeing this. Okay, this is what is in common. This is where the concern probably is happening.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious, what exactly, so you see this stuff happening at home, what are some words to say to the teacher if they haven't brought it up first?
Yes, so often children will act very differently at home than in school. And we see this a lot, especially with children, especially military children that are dealing with life changes or children that are perhaps more prone to mental illness challenges or with learning disabilities. So if you're coming at it from a home perspective, you could say to the teacher, you know, hey, I am noticing that my child is getting very frustrated when you assign math homework. She really seems to have trouble with, you know, multiplication or fractions or whatever. So as soon as you specify what it is, and not in a blaming way, just say, just like you are taught in therapy, I feel that. You make it an I statement. You say, I am seeing. There's no right or wrong. Everyone has what they're seeing and they're entitled to their point of view. So you're saying, my point of view is that she is having problems with fractions. What are you seeing? So end it with a question. What are you seeing? As the teacher, and the teacher can either come back and say, oh, well, she seems to be okay in school, and that would, or, you know, oh, I've noticed that too. Thank you for bringing that to my attention that you're seeing that at home. Or it could be, well, I'm not really seeing that at school, but let me investigate.
Okay. So yes. It's one of the three things. Mm-hmm.
One of the three things, either yes, I'm seeing it, no, I'm not seeing it, or let's find out more.
Okay. And when they say, let's find out more, or something around those areas, what can we do as parents to help facilitate that or support that? Because I know, you know, when a teacher, almost sometimes if you go in and go, yeah, I'm seeing this at home, you're inside going, please don't let it be true at school. You really want it just to be something that you can deal with kind of outside of everything else. But when you get that a validation that there is something concerning or there is an issue that you're dealing with, how as a parent can you not get that mama bear thing and get defensive? How would you recommend that we kind of take that step back as a parent? What can we do for ourselves to help that situation?
Perfect. I'm so glad you asked that. So late last year, I actually did a whole blog post about this, about, you know, ways that you, because it is hard. I mean, I have my own two kids and I know that, you know, going to the doctor's office, I'm always very anxious when they do all of the developmental things. You know, are they making progress? Are they meeting milestones? So it's hard to not get the mama bear or papa bear instinct. The first thing you can do is release blame for yourself. Say, my child is not me. I am not my child. My child is a separate person. This is not my fault. I am not at fault here. This is something that my child needs assistance with. and the school is offering that assistance.
I love that.
And if you need to repeat it to yourself before meetings, just say, this is not my fault. And really, it's nobody's fault. The teacher deals with the children or child that she is given.
Right.
She did not create the problem. The child certainly did not ask for this problem. And you, the parent, certainly did not create this problem. Mm-hmm. It's not something you picked when you were expecting your baby or, you know, going through the adoption process. You were like, well, gee, let me pick one
with
all of these things that I don't know about until I know about them. That's not something you like think about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask Meg, when, you know, you this was great. And you said, you know, the school is offering assistance. What if you don't see eye to eye with the school on the assistance they're offering? What if you think they're not doing enough, or that, you know, maybe you feel that the assistance they're offering is actually going to hinder your child? Maybe they think they should be in, you know, a different classroom rather than being mainstreamed, and you think that's harmful, or any of those situations.
Yeah, so with special education plans, IEPs, individualized education plans, or 504s, which are accommodations under the Americans with Disabilities Act, the parents have every right to agree or disagree. Nothing happens until the parent signs, more for IEPs than for 504 plans. The parent is a vital part of the team. Nothing can happen without the parents, everyone's agreement, really. So if you as a parent are sitting there and you're thinking, gosh, that just doesn't, the child that they're describing doesn't sound like my child, or I don't think that that is what is going to be best for my child, or there's not enough, or there's too much, you have every right to speak up. And the best way to speak up and get what you want is to be logical, present facts. If you come in there and you are a hot mess of tears or a ball of anger, the school is immediately going to look at you and say, she might be unreasonable or he might be unreasonable. And that's the opposite of what you want. So you want to come in with cold, hard logic. This might not, and you're going to use the might, you're never going to use the will. This might not be the best situation for my child because fact A, fact B, fact C. Lay it out. I don't think my child would benefit from being in a substantially separate classroom because I see her flourishing at Girl Scouts, where she is with typically developing peers doing similar activities, because her teacher last year spoke about the growth that she saw in social skills, because the test results show that. You're going to use facts, things that cannot be challenged or refuted, similar to how you would talk about history. No one argues about the Battle of Gettysburg, who won or who lost. It's a fact.
Right.
Okay. Right. So I'm sorry, Jude, I know you have something too, but nope. I kind of wanted to go one other place. I believe that in general, as parents, you know, we know our kids best. I also believe that we can sometimes, you know, that mama bear instinct, papa bear instinct, the being too close to the problem, those things can hinder us. I know the first time, actually it was Judy who said, gee, maybe your daughter, da da da. My brain just exploded, blocked it out, and shoved it in a corner. How can we tell? I mean, are there telltale signs to tell if we're wrong, if what we're asking for our child actually isn't the best thing for them? You know, because there's that fine line. We tell parents, and I know I do this with my kids, I'm like, you have to stand your ground and advocate for yourself. And in, you know, for younger kids, you know, parents definitely advocate for them. As they're teens and older, we advocate side by side with them. But how can we know if maybe we are wrong?
That's super tricky. And that's actually where you would call in a professional like me. You would want to get that outside neutral third party person to come in and say, be your gut check and say, hey, no, that seems like it's a little bit much. Or have you really looked at the data? So what I've done, both as a teacher and as an advocate, is been that gut check for parents, especially as a general educator and not a special educator. You know, kind of looking at the data and saying the data shows that this XYZ. Or, you know, a lot of times it's really hard as a parent to look at your child and say, these are areas of weakness, or these are hindrances. This is a need. And that's very hard to be real with yourself about a child, especially when your child is perhaps on the more severe end of the need spectrum, whatever that need may be. It's very hard to look at your child and say, well, no, they might not go to college. Well, no, they might not have a full-time professional job. It's hard to be that real with yourself, but that should be your gut check, is what is your child actually realistically capable of at the highest potential?
Yeah, we're doing our kids a disservice if we mm-hmm. don't do that, because then we're just going to create frustration and stress and anxiety in them as we push them to be something that they are not. Mm-hmm. It's just the same as taking the klutz and trying to make them be a ballerina, or, you know, yeah. or us taking someone who is amazing at baseball and saying, no, you have to be the linebacker on the football team.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it, we judge ourselves when it comes to our kids' behaviors. If we see something that isn't in the normal spectrum, or, you know, and just in general, what is considered right behavior or whatever we want to call it, I think, and I know for me personally, when my children had issues, you know, one of my kids had learning disabilities, you know, all of these things. And it's really easy to take it to that parenting place where you feel like you have to be protector. So I have one last kind of question. I mean, we could talk about this subject for hours and days. But I have one thing, you know, what is the one thing, if we could just walk away from this interview, what is the one thing, Meg, that you wish parents knew when they were advocating for their kids?
So in general, teachers and schools love your children. All of the students I've ever had are mine. They are mine. And I would do anything for my students, anything. So when teachers are coming at a problem, they're coming at it from a place of love 99.9% of the time. Yes, there are those blips on the radar. There's in every profession, there is one.
Absolutely.
But when we're saying your child needs X, Y, Z, we're giving you the best option from a place of love that takes into account the realistic school resources available and the realistic human resources available.
Okay.
Because there's only so many hours in a day, so many bodies in the school, so much funding available.
Right.
And we wish it were different. We wish we could give every kid the moon. But we're coming at
working together as a team. What I hear you saying from everything from the beginning of the interview till now, it's like if you can come together as a team with the parent and the teacher to get what you both want for the child, which is helping them live a happier, more stress-free, successful life that they're having fun in, that's the end goal. Take that stress away, and it works better when you're a team and you're both on the same side of the fence. I mean, if I would wrap it all up.
Yes, absolutely. We're here for team child, and teacher, parent, school, we're all here fighting to see that child succeed at the highest possible level that they are personally capable of.
Perfect.
And I love that term, you know, team child. That's so cool. So I just want to kind of go back and refresh my memory here, a couple of high points. So you said that oftentimes, most of the time, when a parent goes in to advocate, it's likely one of two things will happen, that either they won't know how to clearly verbalize specifically what their child needs, or they start assigning blame. And those are two things we really need to watch out for, because neither of those encourages anybody to join Team Child. I just don't love that.
Correct.
That's the best.
And so if instead we go in with like this attitude of curiosity and use the words, I'm seeing this at home, this is how it feels to me when my child is trying to work on such and such. What are you seeing at school? Are you seeing these things? Are you seeing something different? And then prepare ourselves to not be defensive by, I like this, releasing blame for ourselves, reminding ourselves that you said, my child is not me. My child is separate, a separate person. What's happening with my child is not my fault, and the school is offering assistance. And then to remember this last piece that Judy just wrapped up so beautifully. Did we get the gist there, Meg? Did we get the high points of what we need to learn?
I think so. If everyone just comes to the table from a place of love with an open mind and ready to help the child in question, there's no limit to what could happen when you're all working together.
And if they don't know how to do it, they need to find someone like you to help them.
Absolutely.
Maybe you feel that you know how to do it and that you have a difficult school situation. As you said, there are professionals available who can come in, who can provide that objective third-party experience, because you have nothing here. You are not the child's parent. You are not the school who has to allocate resources, which we do have to remember that, you know, there are limited resources. So I love this, would love to keep going, but want to thank you so much for your time and for sharing all of this with us, Meg.
Yep. Oh, thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun.
And Meg, if somebody wants to get in touch with you after, where do they go? What do they do?
So you can email me directly at milkidsed, M-I-L-K-I-D-S-E-D, @gmail.com. You can pop over to Facebook. I have a Facebook page. Just search milkidsed. Or you can visit the website. And there are tons of free resources there to help you get started on your journey.
And that's milkidsed.com, correct?
Correct. Yes,
all
correct.
Right, perfect. Well, it has been a pleasure, Meg. Thanks so much. And it is time to dig into real talk right after this quick message.
Parenting is the toughest job you'll ever love. It's a common phrase because it's so true. And as the teen years roll around and you start seeing changes in your child and you may start wondering, what's going on? Are they okay? Is this normal? And again, as they move out of the house, go out on their own, go off to college, you see more changes. And sometimes the changes are perfectly normal. And sometimes they're an indication that your child's in over their head, that there are things going on that they can't handle. And the parents' worry and their concern is, how do I know the difference? Well, now there's a book that can tell you. It's Warning Signs, and it is a parenting guide to help you understand about those changes and to help you figure out if your child could be at risk for depression, addiction, or suicide. The book will take you by the hand, walk you through that understanding, give you the confidence to be able to take the next step, to have a conversation or whatever it is that you need to do, and to give you some idea on some of the paths that you can follow. You can go to dasium.net to the store in the shop there and get your own copy.
Okay, it is time for real talk. And Judy, I have a question for you.
Oh gosh, oh no.
You didn't get to know what today's real talk was about.
No, I did not.
I want to talk about quality time. And yes, you can get out your soapbox.
Okay, so quality time. You know, the first thing that comes to my mind is quality time, schmality time. I hate that word. I honestly do, because it makes me think that there is a certain way that I have to spend with my kids.
Oh, really?
And yes. When someone says, you know, make sure you have quality time with your teen, I just honestly and truly, I want to slap them, because then they took away all of the freedom I have to have a relationship that works with my kid. So it's like, you know, every kid is different. And
right.
So quality time takes on a different meaning for every parent-child relationship.
Oh yeah, I have one who quality time is just sitting on the couch, not touching or anything, you know, because that one that's a cuddler and is going to want to touch somebody all the time. The other one is just sitting, or even in the same room, both reading your own books.
See?
And to her,
and
that's connection. And
right.
Then, you know, we'll talk, then maybe at dinner we might talk about, hey, what are you reading? What was it about? Mm-hmm. But that's connection time for her. So you're right. I mean, that's totally different from
right. But you know, and if you told that to someone else, they'd be like, well, that's not quality time. You weren't even talking. You weren't even doing that. And so that's why when I say, you know, it drives me crazy, because I really truly think that in order to have quality time, whether it's for your family or whether it's one-on-one with one of your kids, I know, like with my son, if I sat down and said, you know, we're going to go have some quality time together, his eyes would roll. And he, you know, when he was in high school, he would have just been like, yeah, right, mom, I'm going out with my buds, you know. But if I could get him in a car with me for a period of time, or we would do an activity together. So maybe be out working on the yard or doing something, like maybe even helping him clean his room, if I could not get angry at that.
But, well, you guys would just go out and shoot hoops and stuff in the driveway. I mean,
right. Exactly. So if you can do those things and have an activity, then it doesn't feel so staged or like it's supposed to be addressing certain issues. I think sometimes when we say quality time, we think that's the moment that we're supposed to have those in-depth talks about drugs and alcohol and sex, or it's the time we're supposed to talk about when I screwed up and wasn't the best parent I could be. I think if we can kind of broaden the definition of quality time, we all would win.
Okay, so let's try this.
Okay.
Let's try quality time is any time that you spend with your kid. And I was going to say enjoyable, but that's not necessarily true either.
Exactly.
Because quality time could be uncomfortable, or quality time could be you being a good parent and having to actually make them angry.
Right.
But what was really interesting to me is you even commented, you brought in chores as quality time. And I know I did that. In fact, I had just probably about 2 months. It was at the end of my kids' college Christmas break. Mm-hmm. They were here 2 weeks of January. Right. I made them help me clean the kitchen. I mean, spring clean it, take everything out of the cupboards, clean out the inside and outside of the cupboards, put everything back. And that was a quality time.
Because you guys had conversations, right?
We were chit-chatting. And what was interesting is there wasn't that moment, it was super in-depth. But what I noticed then was the three of us also were the ones who took all the ornaments off the Christmas tree.
Right.
And that, after spending a couple of hours together doing the most monotonous, nasty, not nasty, gross, but just annoying chore, which is why I made them help me, because I hate doing that. But then it was kind of like just, you know, spending time together softened them up. And then we were taking down the decorations on the tree, and it was, the conversation was amazing. It was the most in-depth of things going on in their life. And, you know, one asking the other one, well, you know, basically, you know, what do you want in this part of your future? What really matters to you? And I'm just sitting back going, yeah, I'd like to know that too.
Well, I have to laugh as you say that, because, you know, didn't we, like in episode 2, with our interview with Dr. G. So if the listeners have not gone to that interview, they really got to do that. But in that interview, she said that it was really important when we give our kids responsibility to choose the things we don't like.
Yeah, so she did.
To do that, I just love how it came full circle. And, you know, she gave us reasons why that was a good thing to do. But as you say, when you put that in practice, the next thing that came from that,
which was another chore that I hate doing by myself.
Right.
I just hate doing it.
It's just, it started that quote unquote quality time.
Yeah.
That moment. And that's what it is. I think, you know, going back, what do you think about quality time? Your initial question, it's like quality time is anything that really and truly connects you to the other person in a way that's moving your relationship forward.
Oh, I like that. So, I like that. And it's something that can't be forced.
Definitely.
I do think that it's our responsibility to make space for it. So things like doing chores together, drive your kids places, even after they get their license, not pushing them into conversations.
Right.
You can do it in silence, but it creates opportunity. That's one of my favorite family vacations were always camping trips because there were no electronics allowed.
Right.
So it just created this space for conversation.
Well, and I think when we're talking about parenting teens and young adults, that is the most important thing is creating space for the child. You know, and you know, some of them are 23. They're not children, but it's creating that space that they feel safe to talk about whatever they need or want to talk about. And I think that as they become teenagers, you know, I remember my parents, I'm the oldest. There's five of us. We're all literally between seventh grade and seniors in high school. We were all that age. And Friday nights was game night.
Yeah.
And we had to be home from X time to X time. Mm-hmm. And what we bitched about it every week. And what was really funny is eventually our friends all asked to come to game night. And my mother got exactly what she wanted, which was a house full of 20 kids ranging from seventh grade to seniors in high school, all in her house, eating, laughing, joking, making fun of the fact that all the Armstrongs had to be home for game night.
Yeah.
But game night was the thing that became that funny, hated, quote unquote, thing that now we cherish. So,
yeah. And since, like you said, this is what you saw me looking away because I had to write down what you said. Quality time is anything that connects you to the other person.
Yep.
And I love that. And so make space for it. Do it however it works for your family. Your space is going to be different from my space, but just make space to be able to have the opportunity to connect with your kids. And then when they want to talk, just listen.
Absolutely, Sandy. And I just want to say thank you to all of our listeners for joining us. We really want to remind you that there's a few different things that if you haven't done already, you don't want to miss out on. The first one is go over to mightyparentingpodcast.com, get your free gift so that you can know when all of the shows come out and you don't miss a one. And you'll get a little something from Sandy and myself just to kind of help you out and inspire you to continue on your parenting journey and spark those conversations. And the other thing is, if you have not joined us over at the Mighty Parenting Group, come on over there because that's where we get our questions. On Facebook. Sorry. Mighty Parenting Group on Facebook. And you want to come on over there because that's where we often answer questions. That's where other parents can help you out with the challenges you're facing, or you can help them out, really creating a community that's working together to create mighty kids and help us raise them in today's world. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you soon.